getting some inside scoop about media creation in Hong Kong. Welcome to globalfromasia.com/episode97.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to episode number 97. So excited you're here with me. It is hot, hot, and hot here in the south of China. August, month of August is always a killer, but even after all these years here, I'm still not used to it, and I sweat through at least one or two shirts a day. So just got to be part of the lifestyle here. And this past Friday, I went down to RTHK, which is Radio Television of Hong Kong company, to be on the air with the Money for Nothing show. They asked me to come on their 8 a.m. Friday live program to talk about my experiences with China startup scene and at Unchained Apps. And it was pretty awesome. Obviously, I'm used to doing audio like this podcast for almost 2 years now. But live radio is a little bit different, plus being in their full, totally awesome equipment studio with like tons of people and production and editors. It was pretty amazing and inspiring, and it was recorded. So if you do want to listen to it, it was only like 5 minutes I was on. It's a pretty fast paced show with financials and other economic news. You can get the link on the show notes of this episode at globalfromasia.com/episode97. We're getting so close to number 100. Honestly, I'm still thinking of what to do when we hit that milestone. It will be right when I'm about to go to America for a few weeks. It's going to be the first time I'm taking my son onto American soil and meet my family. Pretty crazy, huh? Also, I'm a quiet listener of Empire Flippers, Justin and Joe. They do a great job and have inspired me a lot with this podcast. And I was even on a mastermind where Justin came on once and shared with us about how to do some podcast tips that helped me make this very show. And they got me inspired to start an escrow service to help people settle online business transfers. It's called loadpipe.com. And they actually gave me a shout out on their latest show at episode 143. I'll link that up on the show notes. It's a good one too, about bootstrapping business into six digits. So a lot of great stuff already now. And this week's show, we have Tom Grundy, a very bold British journalist in Hong Kong, who recently started a new media company called the Hong Kong Free Press. I've shared a few of his articles on social media and my weekly newsletter, and his definitely stand out. He's very bold and not afraid to hold back. And today he's going to share with us how that all started and a little bit about the media and scene in English media in Hong Kong. So it's a fun little interview, and enjoy. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia show. Today's a fun one. It's a little bit going to be interesting. It's Tom Grundy from the Hong Kong Free Press. It's a new online distribution. What do you call it? Newspaper, or how would you say it, Tom?
I like to call it a newspaper. There's no paper involved. We're not crazy. We're not printing on dead trees. But but yeah, it's a newspaper. Most of us consume news now, you know, through the internet. So
great. Yeah, we met. You were visiting here across the border, and we got to meet. And thanks again for, you know, including me in your article, one of your articles. And yeah, I've been seeing a lot, even cranking out a lot of news, and I know how tiring it is. Maybe we start off just introducing a little bit of your background and how this got started.
Sure. Well, I guess when I was a kid, I was interested in journalism because I was making family newspapers, radio shows, and TV shows. Over into university, it's what I studied in the UK, but for much of the last decade, I was in education over in Hong Kong here, having freelanced, you know, for a few different outlets. And then I set up the Hong Rong blog 2 or 3 years ago, which became quite popular, but was kind of limited in its capacity when it came to, you know, more serious and hard news. So about this time last year, I quit my job, got permanent residency, enrolled at HKU to update my skills on the journalism master's, and ended up sort of cutting my teeth at the Occupy protests last autumn, reporting for BBC Sky, Vocative, Global Post, and Quartz, and some others. And then, yeah, just as we met, we were talking about, you know, startups and what's happening in Shenzhen. And then suddenly I find myself with this storm that is Hong Kong Free Press. And I guess at that time, it was just going to be three or four of us sat in the corner of an industrial building up in Kwantung in the New Territories in Hong Kong, doing rewrites and eliciting content and mirroring other people's stuff. And because of the response we've got, we're now nine people based at Cyberport doing all original content, really. So sort of responded to what people wanted to see.
Cool. Really, yeah, really cool story. So then I know recently you covered a story that I read. It wasn't really being covered by many others, right? Like the whole voting and then the voting mix up and then the maybe recent protests or what happened, you know, like why you think others weren't covering it or what was the...
Which one was that? Sorry.
I'm not being so clear, but I guess there was, you know, basically another kind of protest or not as big of a turnout. I read maybe a week or two ago you shared on your site.
Now, Mike, this is Hong Kong. We have hundreds of protests.
Oh, okay, man.
You're right. We're trying to keep a close eye on the grassroots sort of resistance movement and give truly local news coverage in English, which I think is missing. But I'm not sure if it was maybe one of the district council protests you're referring to, or if it was a few weeks ago, it could have been the July 1st march. We gave pretty intimate coverage. We did more than a dozen pieces, multimedia, including a live blog that day. So a lot more than, I guess, the next competitor, which is South China Morning Post. And then at weekends, you know, there's always incidents, particularly with the localist movement and demonstrations up in the New Territories, which, unlike others in English, we've tried to give due prominence to. In a lot of cases, we're faster and I think give better coverage. When it comes to, like, last week, we saw the crackdown on lawyers in China, and we had some pretty fast and decent coverage on it. But most of the time, we don't really see ourselves as competing with others in the English press because they've got huge buildings and decades of experience and massive editorial infrastructure. And we're a, you know, bunch of quite young, fresh grads, you know, trying to make it happen here in Cyberport. But it's still remarkable. And I feel like we've pulled off somewhat of a miracle in terms of the volume and quality we're already managing to publish. But we made a quick decision in the early days to try and refocus a bit more on quality over quantity and not try and do everything, because, you know, there's only so much we can manage. You know, if the horse has bolted, if a story is out there hours ago and we've missed it, we no longer try and pursue it. But so we're still making changes and finding our voice. But yeah, I think, as you may have noticed, we're trying to focus on things that are missed elsewhere, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah, I like that. It's maybe blue ocean is what they say, you know, with the English press in Hong Kong. There's not like a Red Sea where there's a lot of competition, meaning, like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity and you guys are supportive of each other, or am I misinterpreting?
Well, we're kind of competitors in the English side, but we have partners on the Chinese side, because we're not considered competitors in that with media content sharing arrangements with D100, Stan News, and In Media. So close relationships there, I guess. But and we've got over 120 contributors who we're slowly bringing on board, including 506, who were until quite recently at the SCMP. It's changing all the time, I suppose.
Okay, sure. So I'm sure others are curious, but how are you guys like funded, or your business model, especially hopefully you're independent, or I mean, how does that exactly work?
So Hong Kong Free Press was a direct response to the press freedom situation in Hong Kong, which in all global indices has taken somewhat of a nosedive. So Reporters Without Borders, Committee to Protect Journalists, the Hong Kong Journalist Association, Freedom House, Pan American Report over in January, they've all charted a very rapid decline in the state of press freedom, attacks on journalists, censorship, commercial boycotts. Bit of a storm, really, and I was somewhat sick of reading about it. And this is like a positive response to those concerns. And you mentioned the English press, you know, when concerned with the Chinese press, the situation is kind of worse because there is just less diversity on the English side. At least in Chinese, you've got Post 852 and in media and others, which are independent. But we are specifically set up to try and resist some of those sort of existential and political pressures that other media are beholden to. So we are a non-profit. There are no shareholders. You can't buy a slice of us. So that takes off some pressure already when it comes to funding. But I mean, you ask about funding. We're trying not to rely on any one income stream because, of course, we know the system is broken. Media across the world and any outlet is experimenting and trying to solve this puzzle of producing news, which people are used to receiving for free, and being able to, you know, pay everybody. That really is our only cost, actually, is people. So we had this chicken and egg situation whereby we needed to get money, but you needed to get traffic in order to get money in order to get traffic. So we went for crowdfunding, and we were seeking 150,000 Hong Kong dollars in 30 days when we had that more sort of modest plan I talked about. But because we achieved that in a day and ended up with four times the target amount, $600,000, that's when we expanded our ambitions somewhat. And after that, we've bought on other sort of income streams. So you can now continue with the crowdfunding. You can make a donation and get a reward. You can make a monthly commitment. You can put on an event or activity to raise money for Hong Kong Free Press. There's Bitcoin acceptance, micro donations through Flatter. You can buy merchandise. We put on events, sponsorship, banner ads, native advertising. It totals, I think I've mentioned them all, about 10 different potential income streams, many of which we've already bought online. So none of them will work. Therefore, we're going to do all of them and hope they pay the bills.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you guys are doing a great job. So, and then so is your side report, which is, you know, Hong Kong government's affiliate, right? So they're supportive of your initiative and everything, or?
I don't even know if Cyberport know if we're here because we're sharing with D100, which is a Cantonese broadcaster.
Oh, okay.
It's been very kindly donated to us.
Cool.
By D100 and Albert Cheng. When they were starting out, they were incubated in a similar way for free at Apple Daily. So they're kind of returning the favor here. We have a second base up in Kwantung at Stan News. I don't know if we'd switch to that at some point, but for the moment, it's not the most ideal place for journalism, but the environment is pretty nice, and the internet's fast, and it can accommodate the nine of us, which is the main reason we switched from Kwantung.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, Singapore's a tricky look. It's a really nice like venue. I've been there, but yeah, like right now there's still not a metro that goes there, right? So you're around Hong Kong.
Yeah, and it is a white elephant. We can't deny. I mean, it's dead. But once you're here, getting here is a pain in the backside. But you know, the restaurants are empty. The malls and the supermarkets are really quiet, and that would be maybe a bit creepy anywhere else. But in Hong Kong, it's kind of a relief. And you know, you've got a big panoramic view of the South China Sea and lots of grass, so it's a little bit different. If we need to hotfoot it to Admiralty, to government headquarters, whatever, it can be a bit inconvenient. But we're really grateful that we don't have to pay rent at the moment, because that is, you know, usually the most crippling thing with any business in Hong Kong.
Definitely. I mean, I think I usually say like a lot of those occupied, you know, I think a lot of that outbursts came just because of the rising costs in Hong Kong
for real estate, right? And you know, the difficulties on the middle class and the new graduates. I mean, you know, the rents and just the cost of living has made it much more difficult, because the average salary, right, hasn't really increased
too much. I think
it's
about 8 or 9,000 Hong Kong dollars a month, because people rely on just living with their parents till they're married. And then, you know, and that's graduate pay as well. But the exact point you make is the point that perhaps the pro-democracy side of the pan-democrats could or should be making. There is a piece by Hemlock, famous blogger in Hong Kong, on our site, which went up on the 1st of July, which made that exact point, that there is a missed opportunity by the pan-democrats to leverage, I guess, some of the frustration with the social situation in Hong Kong to rally folks for their cause, because we have one of the widest poverty gap in the developed world. It's a city where you have the highest concentration of millionaires in Asia, and, you know, Mercedes-Benz all over the streets, whilst at the same time there are elderly people, you know, collecting garbage in what is an extremely wealthy, you know, Asian metropolis, which can afford to, you know, fix the problem. Over 1,000 homeless people and folks living in subdivided flats and cage homes. It's somewhat shameful. But it's strange how little really that gets debated in the legislature.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind bringing up your South China Morning Post, but I saw an amazing video they did about like an old woman that's picking up garbage cardboard.
It was awesome. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that was a while last year, I think. But that really like hit you right in the heart, you know, like that seems like a really big problem for sure, that can happen.
Especially when it's fixable, you know. Hong Kong has a huge surplus, which it doesn't seem to know what to do with. So there are huge white elephant infrastructure projects, you know, present company excluded, sitting here at Cyberport. But, you know, bridges to nowhere and giving people $6,000 checks, you know, there are better ways money can be spent, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's always a tricky thing.
You mentioned the SCMP piece. That, for me, is journalism on the right side of justice, and you're amplifying, you know, the voices of the powerless there, and it's in the greatest tradition of what I think good reporting should be about, and it's what I'd hope, you know, as we get more money and resources, we'll be able to pull off as well. We just unable to do much multimedia stuff, you know, at the moment. But I'm looking at the SCMP, I'm inspired by things like that and the Occupy coverage. It's what I have more of a problem with, I suppose, is some of the print edition framing and the editorials. And we just needed an alternative or a complementary, you know, place to turn to, as the SCMP group does dominate all English media here.
True, true.
And so we're filling a gap between Chinese and English, because so much of it really is missed. So when I talk about, you know, news stories where the horse has bolted, which we might avoid, this frees us up actually to bring online, you know, 10 other stories which have been neglected, because there's so much that goes on which is missed, and it's not just, you know, expats and foreigners, but locally born ethnic minorities and some of the Chinese diaspora who are more interested in reading in English, who also need to understand what's happening, you know, to have an informed electorate in the city. So aside from it being the global lingua franca, you know, having this stuff up in English is how we sort of tell the Hong Kong story beyond its borders. I kind of just wish we existed like a year ago, so we could have covered the protest last year.
Yeah, that was I was pretty scared a little bit when that happened, to be honest, because I've a new family here, and you know, I kind of like jumped to conclusions, but luckily, well, I don't know if it's lucky or not, but you know, it did calm down, and I could have seen that getting a lot uglier. But
I don't think we would ever have seen tanks on the streets or any crude sort of moves, physically at least, by the mainland in that sense. But it settled down. I think they waited it out, you know, and Hong Kongers got frustrated with the movement and the inconvenience, and and whatever. But one angle which has maybe been underplayed a little is, in a sense, they won. You know, as those final tents were removed just a few weeks ago from outside the legislature, the proposal by Beijing for the 2017 elections didn't pass, albeit it was because of a farce within LegCo. Yeah. But certainly the Pan Democrats seem to have stayed united in looking to veto that proposal. And I think it's because of the pressure that was built over those 70-odd days in Admiralty, Mong Kok, and Causeway Bay.
Sure, sure. All right, Tom, I know you're really, really busy. You're sitting working 13-hour days, and I really appreciate you.
Oh, my God, shoot me, yeah. But,
yeah, I hope you keep it up, man. So
it's a case of not having to be the editor, and I just rewarded myself that title. I'm certainly not an experienced editor, but also learning about bookkeeping, accounting, HR recruitment, servers, and all of these things I'm less good at. But thank you for having me. More than happy.
Sure.
So
people can tip you stories, or how can people reach out to you? Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Our biggest scoop so far, Jasper Tang's racist comments from a leaked tape, came from someone getting in touch. So our email address is info@hongkongfp.com, and hongkongfp.com is our website. We are on every social network except Weibo. They wanted $1,000 for corporations to so we decided not, although I think it's our sixth biggest source of social traffic, funnily enough. But all the other mainstream social sites we're on, and people can just get updates as well on the site itself.
Okay, great. So thanks, Tom, and can keep fighting the fight.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Thank you, Tom, for coming on and being so bold and brave to keep putting this free press out there. I'm also quoted online in one of his articles about the China startup scene and dealing with that. Sometimes I worry if all these quotes and things I put on the internet will jeopardize my visa in China being renewed. But let's just put ... on that one. Next week's show, we have Gary Murphy from Little Soya sharing about how he carved out a niche in the market of the soy sauce, which is very got some massive competitors. And he's a very motivating guy and shares really openly. So that's next week. I'm sure you're going to like it. Okay, now it's time to take my kid out to the pool to cool off. Enjoy your August days, and I'll see you next week. Peace.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.